This project is co-financed by the European Commission under the European Integration Fund and is supported by the Office for the Promotion of Migrant Integration in the Department of Justice and Equality and POBO.
Hello, this is Eamon Keaton. With me in studio today is Jonathan Larkin and Sinéad Budai. And welcome to Culture Shots. We hope you've enjoyed the series so far. Culture Shots is made up of 8 participants, 4 from Ireland, 4 from outside of Ireland, and we've been working together in teams to bring you programmes about diverse topics. These topics have included cooking, traveller issues, sexuality and gender, asylum seekers, storytelling, and much, much more. This week we'd like to continue our exploration of storytelling and culture. This is Culture Shots, and welcome. Hello and welcome to Culture Shots. Eamon Keaton here. With me in studio is Sinéad Budai and Jonathan Larkin. Hello, Sinéad.
Hi.
Hello, Jonathan.
Hi.
How are we all today?
Not bad.
Very good.
Yeah. Good stuff. We're here today to talk about storytelling. And this is leading from Anne Healy, who's one of our contributors on Culture Shots as well. And she did a lovely show about storytelling a couple of weeks back. She got these great people in to tell stories, and we're kind of taking the ball and running with it here. We want to explore a bit more about storytelling and the culture of it. And Sinéad, do you want to talk to the people about the little experiment we had this week?
Sure. When Anne and I talked about what we would like to do for the story chain, the idea behind the story chain was that we would start off with one person who would create a sentence. This sentence would then be taken to another person, they would read it, and they would contribute by adding another sentence, and so on and so forth. So each person is really reading or hearing the story of few different people who would have contributed, and then they get to add one or two sentences thereafter. And by doing so, the story emerges from a collaboration of many, many different people. The purpose of doing that, the purpose of collecting many different people to contribute to one collective story was to see if we could tap into something. It was kind of experimental, but to tap into see if there was a possibility of recreating or finding out if there is a collective unconscious, as was termed by Carl Jung. This has been tried before. I know Jackson Pollock has tried it with his artwork, but he can step aside this week because it was our turn. The idea for the listeners who are not aware, the idea behind the collective unconscious or the universal unconscious, and it's a very complicated idea, is that as human beings, regardless of our culture and personal experience, there is something that we inherit at birth, which we share with absolutely every single other person that's out there. And there are certain themes that might be prevalent. For example, you know, the belief in God, possibly music being one of those things that's inherent and natural to us all. There are also things, certain archetypes, the archetype of a family, of the hero, of a trickster, are certain archetypes that you might see. And there are also certain ideas, the idea of balance or equivalence, or the idea of absolute chaos. You can't have one without the other, really. These are all things that contribute to this universal unconscious that is part of everybody, and it's part of you before you're born, and it will always continue to be part of society. It's a far out idea, but I think there are threads of truth in it. What would you say?
Yeah, the storytelling as a universal conscious thing is fine, and that could be true, but there's also a more practical purpose. I find in some of the story tales, they've been often used for a way of saying, don't go there, that's dark. Don't trust that hairy wolf with the big sharp teeth that's looking at you. He's probably going to kill you. So there's often a very practical purpose to stories that are told over and over again.
You're saying the messaging. The message is very important.
It can be a larger something that you're talking about, something larger and more fundamental at the base of everybody. But I think it can also be this very practical message that as it's handed down from generation to generation, as it used to be orally, that it changes slightly depending on what social circumstances, the dangers that just happen if there's disease prevalent at the time, maybe the ring-a-ring of Rosie popped, you know, it suddenly pops on the radar and suddenly you don't go near that person because they might have TB. Or it might be just keep away from that pack of wolves or the wolf that's walking through the woodland.
This is just the thing. Just to get back a little bit to Young, he was saying that throughout these stories you'll have common threads or themes, and right there, you know, he's talking about evil. You know, evil as being one of those universal themes that are prevalent regardless of culture. But you know, we use these different characters, whether it's the wolf or whether it's the young maiden, to bring about to explore the theme of evil and good. Maybe we succeeded in our little story, maybe we didn't. The idea behind the story chain was to see if people veer towards creating the universal unconscious. Were they in fact tapping into evil, you know, good, hero, all of these different ideas? Were people actually, just by creating one sentence in a story, were they drawing out and eliciting these archetypes? And so perhaps now would be a good time to take it to that story. I hope you enjoy.
Once upon a time, there was a gray-haired man living in a boat, moored to a boulder at the edge of the world.
A shaft of morning sunlight shone through the porthole as he sat at his table wondering what was that unusual noise he could hear in the distance.
A tram steamer, heavily laden with cargo, was bound for Ireland, a country the old man had never been to before.
The old man started wandering up days of yore, when he was penniless and nowhere to explore.
He would have done anything to free himself of the shackles that had bound him then. He would have sold his soul for a way out.
As the tram steamer approached, his heart beat faster and faster. He longed to be aboard, to be moving forward.
Casting off from the boulder, he drew energy from the sunlight and memories of times when freedom was not his own, setting course for the tram steamer, eager not to miss a new opportunity.
As his little boat moved through the water, he watched the ripples unfurl, created by his own movement, mirroring his thoughts. Eager though he was to travel on, to venture forth, how strange it would be to leave the little corner of the ocean that had cradled and rocked him through many moons, starry nights, and stormy days. As thoughts and memories swirled through his head, he realized with a start that he had reached the tram steamer.
Gathering courage, he took a long, deep breath and called out for the captain, but his voice was too small to be heard over the ship's horn.
This sound, like a thousand celestial horns, permeated through him as unseen hands now pulled him gently aboard. Another consignment for the cargo of souls making its way to the beyond.
Opening his eyes and looking back at the boulder, it seemed so small. The world seemed so big. The adventure had just begun for the grey-haired man, no longer moored at the end of the world.
That's the end of our story chain. We hope you enjoyed it. We invite you to talk about it and to finish the story with your family and friends. We'd like to thank the following people who have contributed to the story. Shanette Budai, John Larkin, Michael Horrigan Sr., John Font, Susan Collins, Killian O'Kelly, Ruth Doggett, Flock to Phelan, Nina Sachow, Jonathan Larkin, and Eamon Keating. So that was our story. What do you think?
I thought it was quite good, actually. I was surprised as well, because most people, you know, I don't know if they're into storytelling or not, but there's a lot of people there coming through with, you know, interesting theories and words, and people saying, you know, starry nights and stormy days. Yeah, it was like I quite liked it. I thought very surprised. Yeah,
I thought all of our contributors were very, very enthusiastic, and yeah, they really took their time with developing each line, which I was very impressed by.
Yeah, they really grabbed the idea and the opportunity to really get very articulate and just getting out there and flexing creative muscles and stuff like that, and that really shone through. And you see certain themes again, you know, voyages, getting out there and traveling and going on some adventure. There's none of those kind of eerie lessons or anything like that appearing yet in the story. God knows where it would go if it went on.
Well, it's interesting. I got the chance to talk to some individuals about why they decided to move the story in a particular direction. One person said to me that she perceived it to be that the man who was more to the end of the boulder at the edge of the world, that he had been a captive, or that he had been there and he was not allowed to leave that boulder, that he was imprisoned, basically. And I thought that was an interesting perspective, because I hadn't at all detected that. I hadn't seen that at all in the story, but that was how she framed it in her mind. And she took it in a different direction. I think she mentioned that she talked about his soul and him wanting a release. And I think subsequently other contributors had the man leave and leave that little boulder.
Yeah, and it's quite, I suppose, metaphysical, even some of the stuff they're talking about, this talk of souls and arms, like taking them onto the boat, like
the afterlife, possibly hinting at it.
People think about that stuff all the time. So, you know, we started off on something that was just arbitrary, and you could have went either way with it, like, and we've gotten this, which is very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm. And do you see that this kind of idea, when you look at different kinds of stories or maybe movies or listen to music, I think these all tap into universal experiences. Do you see, for example, science fiction? I don't know. I think science fiction has the potential to really, potential to really take a story and build on archetypes, although it's not based on reality.
Mm. It's more based on hopes, I think, and future warnings rather than what's gone on in our past and what's worrying us about the present. In science fiction, really, I mean, you didn't really have that 100 years ago. Talk about the future, if some very much, you had Jules Verne and stuff like that, but more and more you've got these science fiction genres talking about hopes and fears of the future, and not so much warnings about what's happening now or what happened in the past. So it's interesting, yeah, the it's more aspirational now, I suppose. At least that's what science fiction seems to be doing with stories, talking about people's hopes.
Yeah, I think storytelling is a way for people to see where they are now, but look at it in a different way. And they're writing to kind of see where they could be in a few years. And science fiction is a great way of doing that. You had like Star Trek and stuff, like, you know, where the human race is the great, you know, guardians of the universe and peace. And we're all like, well, at the moment, it's
that's very aspirational, that show. It really is. People's poverty's gone for the most part, and everyone's quite happy.
And they're not interested in money. And,
they seem to have scrapped all that. But there are other stories. There are the dystopian kind of Judge Dredd, RoboCop kind of stuff going on, whereby people are living in a terrible... We haven't learned our lessons, and the world, we destroy the world, and now we're having to live in it as a warning.
Yeah, the fascinating thing, and another of our Culture Shots program touched upon it in the Geek Culture episode. What was interesting about that episode was the idea that so many people from different countries around the world have listened or watched Star Trek and Star Wars and are absolutely in love with it. They're fanatics about it, and they all, despite their cultural origins and backgrounds or the politics of their current day, or what they had for breakfast, all of them are very quite enthusiastic about these, and they share this theme, this thread in their life. This is something they have in common with one another.
Yeah, yeah. I was wondering if science fiction isn't the hopes and dreams of a collective global thing rather than just of a clan or a tribe, as it was in the past. Is it now? Science fiction stories take it that bit further. They talk about where we want to be, and a lot of people can relate to it.
And I think the great thing about sci-fi is that it's not based on reality. So you know that. You know it's not something reflecting what exists at the moment. So anybody, anywhere, can easily say, can imagine and put themselves into the situation. Now might be a good time for us to take a break and go to a song. I hope you enjoy this piece by Roy Buchanan.
Hello and welcome back to Culture Shots with Eamon Keaton here, Sinéad Budai and Jonathan Larkin, and we're discussing storytelling. That song was Roy Buchanan, Wayfaring Pilgrim. Before the song there, we were discussing science fiction and the future and those stories. But I want to take us back now a little bit to where stories come from, their origins. Jonathan, you had
I've had a little bit of a think about that. I was just again my earlier assertion that a lot of stories have been warnings, and maybe the most fundamental stories have been either origin stories about where the world came from, or maybe practical warnings on do's and don'ts. Be you know, keeping yourself safe. And one of these that kind of ties them both up nicely would be the story of Lilith. Lilith, the word lullaby is actually derived from Lilith go by, that kind of tell a lullaby to make sure that this beastly character called Lilith kind of leaves you alone and doesn't go near you, you know. Her story starts in some apocryphal kind of texts out there somewhere. Adam and Eve, that Genesis story, before Eve came along, before she was there, there was Lilith. Lilith was created at the same time as Adam, apparently. She wasn't at all subservient to Adam, so she was cast out. One of the reasons apparently given in some of the many tales told about her was that she was cast out because of this. Then she went off and apparently mated with demons, giving birth to a whole load of ghouls and ghosts and goblins across the world. And she's been kind of, in some cases, a very ghoulish figure. So when someone tries to tell a lullaby, they're asking Lilith to go away.
I've heard that Lilith actually at certain points, she was known for having eaten children.
That's right. Now, she's in many, many different cultures. She's, I believe, in Sumerian cultures as well. So she does, her character appears in lots of different cultures. The thing about it is she's also seen as something of a figurehead for
The feminist movement. Well. Yeah.
That's the alternative take, whereby she goes, you know, I'm not subservient. I will go off and do my own thing. And she's become a figurehead.
That's right. You know, I find that there are lots of origin stories, creation stories, where women are cast as maybe a bit ignorant, naive. They're the maiden and damsel in distress that need to be saved by this hero and the brave man. And Lilith was the opposite of that. But you go back to, again, the Little Red Riding Hood and a lot of other stories where they would touch upon the very weak and very weak woman. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, the Little Red Riding Hood story has also got very, again, another warning tale, but it's got very grim origins, rather. Before the kind of sanitized version that we know today, whereby she gets trapped by this wolf after her grandmother is eaten, and then the woodcutter comes along and saves her and dispatches the wolf. The original story, which is quite gruesome, involves her going through these woods, getting lost, talking to this wolf. This wolf runs ahead to a grandmother's house. The grandmother gets slaughtered by the wolf. The wolf then prepares a meal of the grandmother's flesh and blood of the grandmother, prepares it. Little Red Riding Hood arrives. He asks, she thinks that the wolf is still the grandmother. She then eats the little lunch put aside, not realizing it's her own grandmother. Then that puts her under some kind of spell, and then the wolf is able to tell her to whatever he wants. He asks her to take her little red coat off, throw it in the fire, come over to him, and then he eats her. So that's a much more gruesome tale, and you wonder what the purpose, again, must have been just one giant warning.
Well, yeah, I think probably also, again, going back to the whole feminist point of view, was that you foolish woman, you know your time and know your place, and be warned, don't go out on your little adventurous. You have a particular thing to do and do it well, but, you know, be forewarned. Don't go out on these great adventures.
There is this thing as well of children's stories and fables kind of becoming much more sanitized as the time went on. Back in the time of the origins of this, they didn't really care for the sanitized versions. They just want to get the most impacted statement out there.
And I would actually say that I wouldn't want to go with the sanitized version. I know children are young and you want to protect their childhood and so on and so forth, but that they're incredibly resilient. And I say this as a person who has worked for a very long time with children. They're incredibly resilient. And if anybody can adapt to an idea and and secure with an idea, it's children. I remember hearing a woman talk about how she was reading a storybook and one of the characters, which was about three bears, one of the characters, the papa bear dies, and she ripped out that page from the book when the papa bear died because she didn't want her little son knowing about death. And I thought, well, you're setting your child up for a complex here. The sooner he understands about death, the better he'll be able to adapt to it. And you know, if somebody in the family dies, he'll be able to respond in a positive way to it. Not positive, but he'll cope. He'll be able to cope, yeah.
So you think we're trying to have our cake and eat it nowadays with stories? I mean, they're sanitizing these versions down, but are they missing the whole point then, you know? You're not to go out into the woods, or you're to be afraid of the wolf. But if they're sanitizing, if the result isn't this grisly end, you know, are we still getting the same kind of warning?
Maybe it's television now. Maybe the oral traditions have gone, and now everything out there is through peer to peer stuff and television and internet videos, everything like that. The new communication forms are taking over.
There is a certain spoon feeding and a certain amount of give the listener what they want to hear and what they want to see, rather than challenging them with things that might make them squirm and a bit uncomfortable, but actually challenging them with ideas that are new and provocative.
Yeah, I know. I know, going away slightly from the story, but like in film at the moment, if you go to the cinema today, you know what stories are going to be on. And it's, again, same stories. It's the
formulaic,
romantic comedy, and then the story of the cheeky bear and the, you know, the mad wolf. And then there's the big blockbuster with aliens attacking us, you know. And they're there every month, like.
Yeah, so, you know, same formula over and over rehashed. Yeah.
It's a Wonderful Life, you know. That's an amazing story, you know, just redemption and stuff like that, and it's repeated so many times in different ways and different stories. In terms of stories, like, they do last forever, but it's very interesting to see the sanitization of certain tales, like.
Yeah, that's right.
You'd wonder what effect it'll have as they go on, or will we lose these stories? And
stories have a staying power that our newer media doesn't have to some extent. You've got big movies, all right, that have been around for a while, you know, Star Wars and It's a Wonderful Life just seem to transcend generations. But I don't know, will they have the lasting impact of the story, the oral story that you read from, you know, out of a book? So yeah, it's a good point. Will those lessons be lost, and will those very subtle and good ways of presenting a lesson be lost? It's very easy now to get entertained as well anyway. I mean, it's all very instant gratification kind of thing going on. You don't have to look very far, you don't have to read very much, you don't have to delve into stuff too much to get the very instant point out quickly. So when you click on the internet and you're looking for a very quick tale or a joke or whatever, it's right there. Same in movies and TV. Whereas a story has to be, so you have to sit down, you have to listen, you have to get into it. And
engage with the storyteller.
Yeah. They had to be good at the time, I guess. You know, it was probably one of the few bits of entertainment you got.
Mm.
But it's still impacting.
That's all we have time for today. I hope you found today's programme interesting. This has been Culture Shots. Tune in every Monday from 6:30 to 7:00. If you miss us, check out nearfm.ie for our podcast. Thanks to Sinéad Budai for research, sound engineering and producing the show. Thanks to Jonathan Larkin, our special guest, for his contributions. I've been Eamon Keaton. Goodbye.
The content and views expressed in this programme are those of the participants alone and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of Pobl, the Office for the Promotion of Migrant Integration, or the European Commission.
This project is co-financed by the European Commission under the European Integration Fund and is supported by the Office for the Promotion of Migrant Integration in the Department of Justice and Equality and Pobl.